All right, once again, you are back here, Drinks with Friends, with your hosts, Madison Ray.
And that guy, Ray. What's cracking, everybody? It's a great day.
It is a great day. Yeah. Did you enjoy your Father's Day?
I did. It was great. Another time. Great. What'd we do? I woke up to an empty house, which was wild. I was like, you know, coming out, it was like 9 in the morning. What the hell? But they're gone for like an hour. I go downstairs, prepare for the day. Chill for a bit. Also, she comes in, she brings coffee, donuts. I'm like, hey, cards, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
A good gift bag.
Yeah.
You know, so it was a good time. We went to see the topic of today's show.
Yeah. We'll get there.
Oh, yeah.
I can't help but think of Everybody Hates Chris, right? Especially when it comes to Father's Day, because that role played by Terry Crews. And that episode was like his Father's Day. Is that? Oh no, that's the day that Dad doesn't do anything.
Yeah.
He works these jobs and all this stuff. This is the one day he don't do shit. So we ain't gonna bother him.
Right.
Yep. What do you mean do something?
Right.
This is it.
Yeah.
I'm doing it.
I'll let him rest.
Right. Wake up to an empty house. Perfect.
Right. It was quiet. Like, I just get up, you know, walk out, scratch, go on about my day. Like, all right. This works. Happy Father's Day to me.
You spend time with the family, though?
Oh, yeah. We did the opposite of Mother's Day, where the women got together and, like, potlucked for the men and the family. So that was cool. Yeah. There was desserts and macaroni.
How was the macaroni?
Like, fried ribs. Which was new
fried
for me.
Ribs.
Yeah, I never had a fried
ribs. What's out here frying ribs?
My man. She was just like,
really?
2 years in a bucket. I'm gonna fry these ribs. And they were delicious. It was different.
I have questions.
Yeah.
I'm a little shook.
Yeah. They were tasty though.
Man.
Yeah.
I never thought about frying a rib before.
Right?
I mean, I feel like big facts, I feel like a little intimidated, like you just gonna fry them.
Apparently she says that it's super simple. Like it's like it's now her preferred method because my granddad was a griller and he's no longer here. You
right.
know what I'm saying? So she's opted to then she just pre-slices them. It's a very light breading. It's not heavy by any means. Fries and pitches up. Makes her own barbecue sauce because she's a G like that. And yeah, they were the unexpected surprise.
Put it down.
Yeah. So thanks, man.
Hey.
Love you too. Glad you're proud of me.
And of course, this podcast is always brought to you. Android DSM, power up.
And Susie Sweet Treats, secret ingredient is love.
Not cocaine.
And I mean, I gotta ask you real quick too, how was your Father's Day?
Chill.
Yeah.
Chill.
Boy, it should be.
You know, the thing is, like, but big facts, like, there ain't really been, like, father figures, like, in my life, like, in any real significant kind of way.
Yeah.
I mean, as tragic as that might sound for some, whatever, like, I never thought two shits about it. Like, my daddy ain't shit. His daddy wasn't shit. You know, like, it's all good.
Right. I feel that. I mean, I was lucky enough to have some backup strong male role models, you know, because, again, daddy wasn't shit.
Yeah.
But my granddad was the shit, and my uncle was a solid dude, too.
Facts.
So
yeah, if anything, your father figures are like my father figures. Like, let's, you know, like, or like, shout out to our homie Matt.
Right.
Like his dad, you know, was like the dad of the neighborhood for all his kids in a kind of a weird, terrifying way.
Yeah.
Yo, he looked at me. Right. I'm gonna die.
Right. Like,
shut up. Right. Don't do nothing. He's looking right at us right now.
I remember when I found out he was human and he took me and Matt to Adventureland and he like was singing along and tapping along to the radio and it like blew my mind.
Right.
I'd never seen him like cut loose like that. And it was nothing exorbitant. Like
no.
It was just a real simple tap along. Like,
You a real dude with real feelings,
right? Like you enjoy things.
Actually, real quick, I remember when he passed, his sister came to the funeral, obviously, and sis slipped a joint into his front shirt pocket,
nice.
or his maybe his jacket.
Pocket, yeah,
yeah. And she sure let me know. She's like, I gave John a joint. Because he was the first dude to ever smoke with me. And I was like, man.
John did what now? Excuse me?
He is a robot. A terrifying robot man.
How dare you sell his name?
Right? Like, so, for what it's worth, as sad as that day was, there was something refreshingly human about that, too. Like little sis rolling through being like, here's a J for my brother. Like, yo, that was
send him on his way. That's
yeah.
Happy Father's Day to all those that have that influence.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But yeah, no, we went to the play.
Yes.
That was cool.
That was cool.
The play is called Too Heavy for Your Pocket,
mm-hmm.
Written by Jere Brion Holder.
Yeah. Directed by our friend Tiffany Johnson.
Yeah, over at Pyramid Theater Company.
Yeah.
Now, the thing is, what's really significant about this, before we like really get into it and start to unpack it, what's so amazing about Pyramid specifically is that they're always seeking to be on the cutting edge of like what new black theater is happening, right? And so Too Heavy for Your Pocket is a new play written by one of the original, like, OG founding members
of
the Pyramid Theater Company, which is, like, so great to see that they're showing support and finding ways to really, like, uplift the community, but also to inspire, you know, like, anybody who's out here making stuff, any of these playwrights, to keep doing that and keep, like, on that journey, because there are these spaces that are willing to hear you out and want to tell your stories. I believe they took a risk on another show of his called Mississippi Goddamn, which actually then went on to go off Broadway.
Right.
So, like, there's something almost about, like, getting that pyramid rub. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like they know where the sauce is. And that's just the coolest thing to me that, like, they can...
Finger on the pulse.
Help facilitate
the future.
That. Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. To actually be part of the conversation, I think, at large. That, like, sure, we might be in Des Moines, Iowa, but as far as, like, the community of black theaters and black creativity within the theater arts, that there is a much bigger conversation happening. That, you know, in some ways, there are some very powerful friends and allies, some influential people who are associated that help make these things really pick up steam and go somewhere.
Right.
It's not just some little theater out in the middle of the Midwest just making some stuff just because. Like, it feels like it's part of the culture, part of the movement, which I think is such a cool thing.
I agree. I absolutely agree, and I think that it's very important. It's cool to see, like, the diversity of the audience in the room. Part of it, I felt like looking at some of the people, I was like, I feel like you might feed off of this energy, like your favorite movie might be The Help.
Sure.
But then there were others, though, that you could tell were, like, genuinely into it, like, sitting there and, like, affected by it. And I think that's a really powerful thing to be able to tell these types of stories to all different types of peoples and all different age groups. So,
right.
Again, yeah, big shout out to Pyramid for
There's something really, I
educating.
Think it's an interesting balance, I think, is the ability that, yes, there is something that is universal about human stories, while also having the specificity of having people that look like us and reflect our own stories back to us.
True.
Like, and that it is simultaneously both.
Mm-hmm.
That, like, here is something that is for all of us, but at the same time, it stars us, right, and it's driven by us.
And this, I agree with that for the overall feel of Pyramid, but this show, too, I felt like was very educational.
Yeah.
In the sense of giving people the idea of what people that look like us went through to get where we are today. There's as much work as we still have to do. It goes back to what we were talking about, what Andre was talking about last week, where it's like the fight that they had to put up was much more physical and visceral than the fight that we have to put up.
Right. Right.
So yeah, it was cool to be able to watch that.
You know, the thing is that now I've heard this, the run is coming to a close, so for our listeners out there, you have one more chance to see it here in Des Moines before it's done. So be sure to go and support and check that out.
Saturday, 21st, 22nd.
Yeah, I know it's this upcoming Saturday. So be sure to go and support that and check that out. But I've heard from some other friends and other audiences that, you know, that the room has been more responsive. You know, in almost in that kind of talk back kind of way, where, you know, it's like that thing where with having black audiences in the theater that you're actually getting the audible,
mm-hmm.
Oh girl, no he didn't.
Yeah.
Kind of.
The movie theater.
The movie theater vibe.
Black movie theater.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And I think...
Or, you know what, I'm sorry.
No, go ahead. Speak on it.
Less the movie theater vibe than the church vibe.
There it is.
So yeah, I feel like movie theater was much snarkier than it actually feels like. It definitely, right. It very much feels like church. And having grown up in that environment, like it was almost comforting when somebody had something like a, you know, a good clap back to hear like the women in the audience go, "Get that," or like when somebody does something foul, I'll be like, "Oh, you know, he, like
yeah.
Let the church say amen."
Now, this didn't happen in our show, and I know that sometimes like white audiences have a hard time kind of catching on and accepting the difference in the culture, that like in those spaces that people will very viscerally will react. It's not something that you sit on quietly,
right.
But that like part of the participation is like the expression of your feelings in those moments. And so I think it's a really fascinating thing, again, talking more broadly at large, is that as the theater starts to kind of, I don't even say starts, but like as it gentrifies further and ticket prices become more and more inaccessible for average people, it is really important that people that you wouldn't expect get a chance to be in those rooms and see these shows and be a part and feel comfortable to participate in the experience and in the process. So it's not just, you know, just well off, right. A certain class,
golf class.
Yeah. Like, I know I keep going back to this, but it's the idea of like the notion of Hamilton is a hip hop show, y'all. Y'all spent hundreds of dollars to go to a hip-hop show to sit and clap politely.
Right.
I am all the way fucked up.
Like, never been to a cypher in your life.
Like, I enjoy it, but at the same time, I'm like, yo, like, y'all better...
Are y'all not hearing these bars?
Right. You better get your whole fucking life right now and get on board. Nope. Golf claps. Oh, that was aptly performed. Oh.
Yeah, the time of her here is just... Okay. Mind blowing. She can't sit your ass down.
Right. She better stand your ass up.
Shit, somewhere else. Somewhere else.
Right.
Some people in who will appreciate this.
So that all being said, I appreciate that you know, I think the larger movement is really how you diversify the audiences. Mm. Through the stories, I think, through the effort that you make in having more representation on stage and in a lot of the behind the scenes and infrastructural jobs as well, I think that allows for the audiences to also be more reflective and be more diverse and inclusive. So, like, again, mad props to maintaining and keeping that same energy season after season of trying to, you know, really attract all types of people,
right.
Young, old, black, white, rich, poor, whatever, like come to the theater, get this story, get your life, have a little bit of church in a way that you might not expect church to be having.
Indeed.
That being said, let's actually talk about this piece of work, Too Heavy for Your Pocket.
Yeah. All right, so it's a story of four people, two couples.
Mm-hmm.
One of whom is...
It's like 1961?
Yeah, 1960s Nashville?
Yeah. Yep. Nashville, Tennessee?
Setting Nashville, Tennessee. And so, yeah, two couples, working class black folks in the South. One of whom, who arguably the main character...
Brandon?
Bosey.
Yep.
Intelligent guy going to school, who's going to night classes and stuff like that. And... Time of Freedom Rides, and so he decides that becoming educated, he's learning more about the plight of the people are going through, and he ends up having what would be considered a higher calling.
His eyes are opened
to the plight, and he feels that he needs, what good is education if you're not using it to further your people, and at this time, how could my time be better spent than in the books when I could actually get out there actively fighting along with the people who are actually fighting.
And then
his best friends, basically family. One pop of a Rolling Stone type dude who's out here trying to get right.
Right. He done did his dirt.
Right.
He trying to live right.
He's trying to live right.
Settle down, have a family, all that.
Yep. And as a lot of black men will identify with, people aren't necessarily letting his mistakes live in the past. It's like they keep coming up.
Well, here's the thing I think that was really fascinating. In its... I don't know. these characters felt, I don't want to say like stereotypes, but more like archetypes.
Yeah.
For black storytelling, right? Yeah. Right. So you got the trifling ass dude.
Yep.
Who's got maybe kind of this redemption angle, right? Mm-hmm. He's trying to make good and do right by his friends and family. You've got the singer and entertainer. Mm-hmm. You've got the intellectual, you know, eyes on the future, like fight for the cause. And then also kind of the strong black woman. And these, again, while there might be some overlap and sharing of some of these traits, these definitely felt like archetypes,
right,
in this setting. And that was maybe more my read on it, which I thought was really fascinating.
It's truly fitting.
So that being said, does that harm or help the narrative?
In this story and in this setting, I think it helps the narrative.
Yeah.
Because this was, I mean, for as much as it was a more tumultuous time, it was also a simpler time.
Sure.
And so I think having those
strong... The idea of being able to just carve out a piece of life for yourself. And,
exactly. Yeah. You want to be able to live, raise your family comfortably. You don't want no smoke, like you're just trying to live.
Yeah.
And so in that context, yeah, absolutely. I think those archetypes served the narrative well.
Mm.
It allowed for clear and concise storytelling, which I think is important in theater, because you only have that limited window of time to tell a story.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, I think there's been a movement of like, we want something that feels like close to home. We want something that feels real. Mm-hmm. And I don't think it's necessarily true, in that the play is exactly the exercise of fantasy. So in that regard, like, I feel like you need to understand, or it's to me, it's always been the notion of symbolically of what I'm trying to get some other deeper ideas across, not just the surface story of, and here's some guys that went through some stuff some one time, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, and here's some catchy songs to go along with it. Like, the ideal is that there is something that is talking to something about something much deeper, and it's been that hopefully affects an entire audience or audiences that will see it. So that being said, I feel like it is necessary to kind of go broad and general and think bigger and wider as these characters are representative. It isn't necessarily in all of these little fine, minute details. Like, you can add those things for window dressing, but I feel like if you were to play it as closely to like being real as possible, I feel like it would not land.
I agree, you know. I mean, I think that speaks to the importance of archetypes, because when you have like a base archetype of a character, mm-hmm. you can then reflect your own ideals onto the person. So when you identify with a certain character in a show like this, it's because it's like you're projecting your own thoughts and feelings onto the.
But then I also have to, just for the sake of conversation, I have to ask, like, are these archetypes of essentially black Americans built in stereotypes? You know what I'm saying? Like, even from a black voice and a black playwright, are these archetypes informed by some of the kind of racial bias that exists in this country culturally?
That is a big question. But if you're going to ask it, I think you have to ask an equally big question of how often are stereotypes based in truth?
Sure.
Because, right. You know what I mean? Because, again, projecting your own thoughts and feelings onto these, like, template characters, you know, that's what allows you to identify with it. And some of those, like, you identify with people that sometimes fit those stereotypes. I know plenty of tired, strong black women who might have put up with something, and they, like, kind of have to swallow that pride when it takes somebody back, and then have it eat away at them to a point where they can't do it anymore.
Sure.
You know, they've reached that breaking
point. I will say, I know we try to not give spoilers, but I feel like in this space we can maybe explore that a little bit, because I think what we're going to talk about is important in this kind of analysis and breakdown and exploration of what we just saw. So while we're offered these archetypes, stereotypes, however you want to like phrase that, the characters actually go through some things in their own personal journeys and narratives that undermine and give a left turn
right
to literally all of those stereotypes, right? Like, So where you might have seen the promiscuous young handsome man not getting caught in his ways and just falling back into those habits of just being like, play is gonna play. He tries to make right. He's saving his money. He's working extra things, and despite everyone's suspicions, he's actually on the straight and narrow.
Yeah,
it's not a hustle. Down, it's right. not a hustle. It's not him like trying to play the part while he's just being who he is.
Mm-hmm.
His wife gets fed up and chooses to leave him.
Right.
And when he apologizes, she doesn't stay.
Right.
She
goes, "Oh, you finally respect me,"
and still walks away.
Yeah.
Right? Or the singer doesn't just fall back into a life of entertaining, drinking, and all that kind of stuff and all of that. And not even in necessarily in the way of like, and then she found God and everything was like, which is another one of those kind of stereotypical like story beats that tends to happen in all the Tyler Perry movies.
Yeah, we know how we feel about
that. I have a question about that. We'll come back to that. The notion that she has also decided to open this new chapter of her life, you know, to be a wife and a mother, and to put that piece of her life not on hold, but to know that chapter for her is closed, or she's decided to close it.
She's ready to close it. Which is the important.
Yeah. But I also find it really fascinating that this narrative, while it feels like the beginning of a hero's journey, right? It gives you the realism of Bosie doesn't get to go out and be the hero per se.
Mm-hmm.
He's driven by a higher calling or a greater cause, but ultimately, like, comes home.
Right.
Safely. But still doesn't necessarily see it all the way through to the end to be, you know, some sort of like civil rights champion.
Yeah.
It's just that he was down for the cause for as long as he could be.
Yeah.
Well,
he was down for the cause until he found out that he was going to. Well, that he was going to be a father.
That was the big one.
He found the thing that was more important to him than the cause.
Yeah, but then also the notion of recognizing that there was a difference in class amongst black folks,
right?
And all these freedom riders.
Yeah. And the privilege that comes along with
those. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, spoiler alert, whatever, you've been warned.
Go read the play.
Go read the play. Go check it out. I mean, even I think knowing what happens, it's still, it's live theater. You're going to get something new and fresh and amazing
with every
in the experience. He gets arrested.
Mm-hmm.
And while all of his comrades get to get bailed out by
their affluent parents.
By their parents or whatever. He's left to sit in jail for more than a month. He's in a penitentiary, like living that prison life for real, abandoned by the movement that he has left his life to go be a part of.
Mm-hmm.
So there is that thing that, like, I feel like that's something that isn't ever really talked about. It's definitely glossed over in our own history, and I think even amongst ourselves, is that, like, we went and accomplished this thing, but what about all of the regular folks that it takes to get there? All of the casualties along the way, and all of the risk that is taken in fighting that fight, which is, I guess, a throwback to last week's episode, what Andre was talking about, you know, like, you have to embrace where you are in the fight, and I think really recognizing what that means, like, when you're really down for the cause, and what consequences can follow.
Right.
So I really appreciate that this story kind of went there and gave you the story of someone who had the idea, had the heart, had the vision, but it just didn't quite, you know, pan out the way that he thought it was going to be, because it's easy to get, I think, lost in the fantasy of or the romanticized idea of, like, going out and fighting the fight, right?
Right.
But then also, in retrospect, and it's something I was feeling as an audience member, is like, but yeah, he's like out here trying to do the right thing. But in the moment, for as far as these characters are concerned, he's making a foolish mistake. He's throwing away his life for nothing. Maybe.
Right. And well, and that too, and it was hard. It's funny because, like, for me, his wife, Buzz's wife, was like the villain of the story.
Yeah. She was like the closest thing to a villain, I would say. There was an antagonist.
Indeed.
Evelyn's the one.
That's right. Evelyn, she needs to take several seats throughout. I think I enjoyed her performance the most as well, though, because I was able to, like, understand where she was coming from. Like, you know, like, you're seeing somebody go out here and potentially literally die for a cause that is outside of your immediate circle.
Yeah.
Like, especially amongst, like, black people in the time, like, in Jim Crow era black lives. You know what I mean? Like, we're struggling enough as is right here. You could be right here helping. You are currently going through the steps to be able to help yourself and therefore help the people you love out of the current circumstances.
Right.
And you're going to then, as you said, throw it all away for what could be considered a dream.
Right.
So I was able to sympathize with her, but like she still pissed me off. It was more for how she handled things than like her the way she felt about them. You know?
Well, you know, she's clearly hurt.
Mm-hmm.
Daddy issues. Abandonment issues,
right?
You know, and that, like, and that's a, I think that's the deeper thing. Is like, so while this is like said as a period piece, the broader tale that's being told is that, so yeah, sometimes we don't know what's on the other side, right? And the thing that we're chasing, but also the importance of our family, while also like how do we deal with our own kind of emotional traumas. And how does that really play a role in the relationships that we create with each other, amongst ourselves, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. I think it's really valuable to have modern perspective on an older time that, again, doesn't romanticize it over, you know, so overtly, you know, like... You know, in that way of like, oh yeah, in the civil rights era and all that kind of stuff, and they went out and they fought so bravely and beautifully and da 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 da. Like, yeah, okay, but what does that mean for us right now?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I think I get to give kudos to the playwright, the author, in I think bringing some of that perspective to this kind of snapshot of a time that, like, I think is so far away from us that we can easily, like, paint over with those sepia tones, you know what
right,
I mean?
Right.
Ah, yes, back in the day.
Mm. Simpler times.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. Any thoughts on any outstanding performances in particular? I mean, I guess to kind of break away from the narrative itself and go a little meta.
Honestly,
which actors are bringing it for you?
Four of them really shone brightly in different parts of the play. Like the emotional scenes when the brother was in jail, when Bozy was in jail and he was going through everything. Like you could hear the hurt that he was trying to convey in his letters home. You know? That was really powerful. More powerful than it was when he was trying to argue his case for why he needed to go.
Yeah.
Like, was him telling about the struggle that he had to go through. Like, to hear that narrated was powerful.
That whole sequence, actually, I want to go ahead and give Tiffany all of her props for how she directed that. So the Stoner Theater is a black box. It seats about 200 ish on three sides. But when we find that Bozy has been arrested, he's actually marching in chains above the audience,
right?
In
backlit.
In the kind of catwalk and scaffolding of the theater itself, used as a play area. So above us, you hear the shackled man
shuffling
to his cell, and then it's framed in this little kind of like nest in the corner that hangs again over the audience. It's an incredible use of the space. It was obviously, I think, it added another layer of like just immersion. That, like, now it's not just happening in front of you, it's happening all around you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
shout out Freddie Fulton.
Yeah, Freddie really like really went like took some really bold risks as an actor, and I appreciate that. Like, actually, the thing is, I think he did so well. Actually, had me really nervous that this play was not going to end very well. You know what I'm saying? Like, once you add the law enforcement angle to any like black story, you feel like you know how this is going to end.
Yeah, we discussed this yesterday. Yeah. It's like the ultimate ending or the original ending of Get Out.
Get Out,
Like you're expecting the worst.
Right. Yeah. So you see those cop lights roll up and you're like, oh no.
Damn. So yeah, he absolutely did a great job. RJ, this is the first time I've ever seen RJ not singing.
Yeah.
And he did a great job as well. Like, he played a powerful performance. A guy that I recognize, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, he was definitely, I feel like, the most relatable. Because, and maybe it's a millennial thing where it's like, maybe it's just like the age we are, like early 30s. Like, we're past the age of like our 20 year old fuck ups. And like, now we're like really trying to get our lives together and do the right thing.
Well, speak for yourself.
Right. The responsible one of the group. The responsible one of your co-hosts here. I feel that. I think he played that to a T. Like, especially the whole part, like, yo, can I live? Like you said you're over it. If you're over it, you're over it. If not, well, then keep pushing. Like,
yeah.
I don't need this energy.
You know? Right? You said you're over it.
Clearly.
So are you over it or not?
Because right now I'm getting mixed signals. So he did a great job. That was fun. That was fun. What about you? I'll let you shout out the ladies.
Yeah, you know, I'll say this entire ensemble, I think, had really great just natural chemistry. You know, like you could feel like their back and forth felt really organic and it felt really good. If there was anyone who were missing lines or if there were any little of those little fuck-ups that do happen.
I didn't catch it,
never noticeable. So, like, that whole thing, like... So, that being said, their ability to keep those scenes moving and stay engaged and keep those kinetic moments, fantastic. Fantastic. And because it can be hard to, like... It's that working together, right? Yeah. I'm throwing something at you. You got to send it back. And if you're not, like, you're killing the scene.
Yeah.
The actress that played Evelyn Brandon, her name's Brittany Horton, she was fantastic.
Agreed.
She also took some really bold risks and really put it out on the line and put herself out there and really opened herself up. And, you know, honestly, I think this comes back to really kind of paying appropriate props to Tiffany's direction, because you need a strong director to create the safe spaces for the actors to feel like they can take those risks and really deliver a stirring performance. So while you felt, like she was kind of the villain of this story, because she was like the one that was consistently naysaying and not only that, but...
He's dead to me.
Yeah, that whole business, like...
Chill.
Like, you're supposed to be his wife, right? Like he clearly loves you. Mm-hmm. And you gonna hide a baby from this
He's
dude?
Trying to not only...
You gonna da-da-da-da, you know, like...
Yeah.
Evelyn, I'm mad at you.
Yeah.
But at the same time, to create that... That could have come across as really two-dimensional.
Mm.
That could have come across... You know what I mean? Like... and I think she played it with a sensitivity that made it relatable in a way that you're like, okay, I see what you're saying and I understand that you're hurt, but also at the same time, like, damn, like, can we resolve this?
Yeah.
So when we actually do get to resolution, it did feel earned.
Yeah.
It felt like appropriate, like not just we're going through the motions of and we get a happily ever after, but it really felt like, you know, their reunion really had the weight.
Yeah.
So there was that satisfaction. I got a little goosebumps when they embraced, you know. The other actress played Sally Mae Carter. Raja Campbell.
Yep.
Fantastic. I've seen her in some other stuff with Pyramid, I believe. I saw her in Raising the Sun.
I don't think so. I think this was her first one.
This is her first one?
I do know she's a fellow Roosevelt alum.
Yeah.
Yeah,
Shout out, hey.
So it's cool to see, you know, people from close to home on the stage, put it down, and really playing a really pivotal role in the entire show. Like, she was kind of the glue of the show.
Yeah.
She was what connected all the characters.
Right.
And she played that role of bouncing off them to 18. Like, she seemed like that person that you could confide in. And it's really sad because, like, while she was everyone's backbone, she was the one who, I mean, arguably got hurt the most.
Yep.
Which is, again, par for the course for your strong black woman.
Right, if you're talking about archetypes,
exactly.
To a T,
yeah.
I got everybody's back and ain't nobody got mine.
Right.
And I'm strong enough to do this on my own until I get to a breaking point.
And even then, she's still strong enough to do it on her own. She's just going to be on her own.
Right, but I think
there comes a point where you can't take care of everyone else.
And that's why I think that resolution was so important. Was so important because she had to get there, and it wasn't this you said you're sorry and you gave me a hug and a kiss and we're just gonna try to make this work and I'm just gonna suck it up and back to the same old.
Yeah.
Like, so the fact that a character like that had such a breakthrough, I think it's again so valuable for audiences who might be going through some of that same shit, like, yo, your man ain't shit, sis.
Right.
Like,
it comes a time you gotta take care of you.
Quit letting these pastors tell you that you gotta suck it up and ride it out. Don't let these people fool you into giving away the whole store.
Crying yourself to sleep is not that good.
I mean. So yeah, you have one more chance to go check out this show. Please go out and support the theater arts. Go support Pyramid. There's also another show they have coming out on Sunday, which is a one-man show written by Wilson, starring my homie Aaron Smith. Fantastic. Actor, singer, just great performer, great human being. So yeah, be sure to go and check that out. You can go find tickets at dmpa.org at the Center Theater for this next weekend.
Good.
Yeah. So of course, thanks for listening. Leave us a message, drop a comment, like, share, all those things. This podcast is brought to you by Android DSM Power Up
and Susie Sweet Treats. Seek ingredient is love,
not cocaine.
We will catch y'all next week, same black time,
same black channel.
All right, peace.